the skin disorder got worse every springtime, coinciding with the time of the death of his father.
Welcome to the IPA podcast, Psychoanalysis on and off the couch. This is a podcast in which we will discover the world of psychoanalysis that lives beyond the couch, beyond the individual consultation room. We will meet psychoanalysts who work in dialysis units, prenatal clinics, corporate boardrooms, community centers, humanitarian organizations, and with vineyard workers, just to name a few. We hope these conversations expand our awareness of how broadly psychoanalytic thinking extends into our communities. Come listen, enjoy, and please share your comments on the webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Harvey Schwartz. I'm an analyst on the faculty of the Psychoanalytic Association of New York and the Psychoanalytic Center of Philadelphia. My guest today is Dr. Jorge Olnick. Dr. Olnick is a psychiatrist and a psychoanalyst and a training and supervising analyst at the Argentine Psychoanalytic Association. Dr. Olnick has devoted his professional career to the mind-body interface, especially as it expresses itself in psychosomatic conditions and even more focused in the world of dermatology. He is a sought-after consultant to dermatologists and dermatology patients. He has lectured around the world on the subject. Just a sample is he's spoken in Portugal, Australia, Italy, Israel, Brazil, Colombia, New York. He writes about the psychoanalytic approach to dermatology for medical journals. He has published 22 papers in Spanish in addition to 7 book chapters and 2 books, and his latest book in English is called Skin in Psychoanalysis. We will hear from Dr. Olnick about his extensive experience in this area, his work with individual patients, and the conceptual thinking that backs up this clinical approach. With great pleasure now, I invite you to my interview with Dr. Olnick. Dr. Olnick, welcome to our podcast. It's a pleasure to have you with us. Dr. Olnick, you have worked for so many decades in the area of the mind-body interface, especially as it applies to dermatologic patients. You have written extensively about it, you've lectured around the world on it, and treated many patients. Can you share with us your experience about what in particular you feel a psychoanalyst has to contribute to the medical care of the dermatologic patient, and indeed working collegially with dermatologists themselves?
Well, I thank you for inviting me to the podcast. For me, it's a pleasure to talk with you and the audience. I started working at the hospital with inpatients, and especially in liaison psychiatry, link psychiatry, and the dermatologists were the ones that more often asked me for interconsultations. And I had to assist very severe cases with all the skin severely affected. And I realized how important the skin is for life. Usually, the skin and the mind were considered by the public, the general public and the doctors, as superficial or not very important things. For example, when you have a heart attack, you are a very important patient. But if you have a rash or pruritus or itch, you are not an important patient for the authorities, for example, for the budget of the hospital. But when I assisted these kind of patients, I realized that they were severely affected, and how parallel are the functions of the skin and the functions of the ego. And, working with dermatologists, I decided to treat patients not only at the hospital, but at my private office. developing a technique of joint consultation. It means that the patient comes with his or her demand, comes and two doctors were waiting and assisting him or her, and the patient can start complaining about the skin or complaining about some life problems, emotional problems. If the patient starts talking about the skin, the dermatologist started the consultation and the ordinary physical exam and questionnaires and so on. And if the patient asks or starts with emotional problems, I was the one who started the consultation first. And in this way, we worked together with the dermatologist that started with me, and we found that the patients liked to talk about their lives, and the life events, the emotions, and the disease are intertwined, articulated. But to do that, it was necessary to make a research or questions to the patients about his or her life and emotions. And usually, dermatologists don't have enough time to do that, or they are not aware how important it is.
This is a real example of, you know, there's an old saying in analysis, you take the patient where they are. And you're really giving an example of if a patient comes in and is primarily focused on their skin, they're able to speak to a skin doctor. And if they're primarily focused on their emotional pain and troubles, they're able to talk to a talking doctor. And I assume that leads the two of you eventually to work together to help the patient integrate the mind and the body.
Yes, of course. Well, the integration is very difficult within the mind of the patient and between us, because during this way of treating patients, we suffer some splitting between us. Because, for example, the dermatologist started to think about going under analysis. And in my case, every spot or pimple or every lesion, simple, ordinary lesion that appears in my skin, I was afraid of getting worse and becoming a skin patient. That's why the integration is difficult, because we have to integrate ourselves also. It's a counter-transferential phenomena. Even with teams, when we developed this technique, working together, and we funded a psoriasis center first, then we treated not only psoriasis, but also vitiligo, atopic dermatitis, and alopecia areata, very often called psychosomatic skin disorders. And we needed meetings among us to integrate our opinions and to learn how to listen each other, because the tendency is always to separate and to work the psychoanalytic team apart from the dermatologist team. And the patients usually try to separate us. For example, very often they say, well, I'm not happy with your dermatologist. Don't you mind if I go to a homeopath or another professional or a quack, a non-traditional healer? In the same time, I continue coming to you doing psychotherapy. Or they say to the dermatologist, I don't want to continue carving my emotions. I don't want to continue going to psychotherapy, but I like to continue being treated by you, the dermatologist. Can I continue in the same center without seeing your psychotherapists? And this provokes a sort of a fight. It's not really a fight, but
tension, sort of the mind-body tension.
Exactly. Oh, exactly. Who is the owner of the patient? For example, is my patient or is your patient? And in this way, some patients maintain the splitting outside them, trying to provoke differences between us.
Could you give us an example of patients with whom you've worked like this, where the integration has been productive for them?
Well, for example, we had a patient that was convinced that he has a very important allergy, because every springtime he had a flare, an outbreak of his skin disorder. He started his treatment with us, and in a session of psychotherapy, suddenly, one session during the third year of treatment, he was aware that his father died in springtime, and he was not aware that every springtime he became sad and strongly affected by the not ended mourning that he needed to work through. So during the third year, he was aware that the flares or the outbreaks were influenced by his sadness, not by the only by allergens of springtime, flowers and so on. And well, the particularity of his father was that his father was very sadic and prohibited him to sweat. This is a very strange belief of his father. His father thought that getting wet was bad for the health of his child, so he prohibited his son to get wet. So this patient, when he was a child, couldn't play, because every child who plays becomes wet for transpiration. And the father touched his back under the clothes to prove if he was wet or not. So transpiration became in his patient the role of, for example, it was similar to the enuresis problem. When children have enuresis, they feel ashamed for doing pee in the bed, and they stay in bed a long time waiting to dry the urine for not being discovered that they made pee during the night. Well, in this case, he stayed hours out of his house waiting to dry his transpiration and to pass the revision, the examination that his father did on his skin. And well, very later, he developed a very severe chronic skin disorder, and the skin disorder got worse every springtime, coinciding with the time of the death of his father.
It was an anniversary reaction.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Typical in psychosomatics.
Yeah. Can you say more about the background of the patients that you see, the emotional background?
Well, there are many important factors. One, the most popular and mentioned in some papers and books, is the lack of touch. So if you are not touched, if you didn't receive caresses of your mother or your father, maybe your skin would react getting ill. But the gaze is also very important, because the skin reacts with the gaze and interact with the gaze. In psychoanalysis, we mention many drives. One is the drive to touch, but other is the drive to see. And both drives interact in a very important way. So if you are seen as if you were transparent, for example, Or if you have a dead brother or sister and your parents gave you the name of the dead one and see in your person always the dead son or daughter that they had, you are not exist, you don't exist for your parents. So being affected by a skin disorder is a way to exist, because you are seen by them through your skin disorders or your spots. And some people are what I call given to be seen completely. It's an existence completely dedicated to be seen. In these times in which the selfies are very common and all the people are in Instagram or filmed or photographed, to be seen became very important for people. And if you have a lesion in your skin, the first reaction is the reaction caused by the eyes of the other person. So depending on how you have been seen, maybe a skin disorder could appear. Or some patients don't have a natural skin disorder, but they tattoo all the skin, or they scratch the skin and provoke the self-inflicted lesions.
You're describing the difference, if I understand you right, between being seen and being known.
Yes.
In place of being known who they are as a person, they will settle for perhaps what was adaptive for them in their childhood, that they will be seen for some superficial, in this case, skin condition. It could be any narcissistic focus. They could be seen for something brilliant or beautiful or powerful, and you're adding to the list being seen as having an illness, all of which can be other than to feel known as the inside of them.
Yes, exactly. There is a big difference between being known and being seen. Well, in Spanish, there is a sentence very common to say, which is the appearances cheat you.
Yes, yes.
And the Little Prince, a very famous tale of Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, the Little Prince, he says, the essential is invisible to the eyes.
Oh, the essential is not visible to the eyes. Yes, exactly. That's what I mean about being known. Right. And I assume that would be part of the process of treatment in working with patients, that they would syntonically assume that they will be recognized only on the surface, and efforts to help them locate their affects, the affects from the inside, and have an object relation with the analyst, which can enrich their exposure to their affects, is the remedy for this superficial seenness.
Well, this is a very important issue, and it needs some explanation. There is a famous psychoanalyst, a French one, named Didier Anzieux, who wrote a book, The Skin Ego. And in this book, he says that there are what he called formal representations. Formal representations means representations of the shape of things and the development of concepts like container and content, inside and outside, ego and non-ego, external and internal. We, the psychoanalysts, always interpret very deep things. But Didier Anzieux says that together with this kind of interpretations that are very useful, we also have to interpret some formal things, helping the patient to build an interior with the aim of treating the problem of the surface or to be superficially known only or treated. So many times we build with the patient concepts or ideas about the inside, the container, for example, the barrier or the interchange, or what things could be interchanged and what things couldn't be interchanged, following in the psyche the same functions and progresses that the body does during the human development.
Let me ask you something more about that, because I think it's vitally important. In my experience working with psychosomatic patients, the challenge, and many have noted this, is that they, like I say, they didn't have access to their affects. And it seems to me that it isn't most amenable to interpretation, in the sense that if their mind doesn't have access to what some people call an interiority, their inner experience, if you talk to them, they're just hearing you through their surface way of living. And, you know, we are now in the realm, technically, of enactments. And do you have anything in your experience that you have found useful in terms of enacting gestures with patients, whatever that may mean, of course, is a way to reach them affectively in a way that words often fall short?
Well, imagine that you suffer a burn. For example, there is a fire or a boiled water and you are burned. If you are burned, if I touch you when you are burned, it hurts. It hurts a lot. So to help the patient to connect with his or her emotions, a sensitivity is needed to find out if he or she feels like a burned person or like a person who has hurt some injury in his skin. So we help the patient to connect with his or her emotions, but very carefully. And I have to make clear that patients are not superficial. They are deep like us. The problem is that they suffer a lot with some deep emotions. So we do like an exercise of entering, go inside and going outside. And of course, rehearsing in the relationship with the analyst, in the controlled setting of a session, the effects of touching some sensitive parts of their soul. Another thing is, for example, when the patient tries to show, for example, to show the skin, you know, for example, they say, look how I am, how am I? Or for example, I saw many times in the consulting office of a dermatologist, the dermatologist says to the patient, how are you? And the patient signals some scales falling in the floor and saying, look, I am like this, as if another me, another person, is projected in the scales on the floor, like a duplication of the self.
Yes, they are their skin, which is falling in the doctor's office.
Yes, but it means, if you are capable to understand this message, the patient is saying, I'm falling to bits, I'm destroyed. You ask me, how are you? And I feel completely fragmented in little pieces, like a puzzle who is disorganized.
But not in words, but that's the other part of it. They're not saying, I feel X or Y. They are showing it behaviorally.
Exactly, exactly. They are showing, and the skin is like their mirror or their screen to project that. For example, when I did my practice at the hospital, I thought that patients' bodies are invaded by cells, for example, when they have, for example, cancer, but also by invasive and evil relatives, and that patients' skin stings and itches, thus craving cuddles. And the problem is that as analysts, we don't hug the patients and we usually don't touch them. But skin patients need to be touched. So how to solve that? First is to avoid using only the visual channel of communication. And second, not being afraid of sometimes touching the patient, for example, at the end of the session. For example, some patients that don't have boundaries, concept of boundary, they talk and talk and talk and talk, and when the session ends, they continue talking as if nothing happens. And I say, well, it's time, and they continue talking and talking. I stand up, and the patient continue talking. So what I do is to touch the patient, touching with the palm of my hand on his or her back, and accompanying the patient to the door of my office, saying, we'll continue. So giving a sense of continuation of the session next time, but with my hand accompanying my words saying goodbye.
It sounds like you're also commenting to them, which they likely aren't aware of, that they're talking and talking after the session's over, reflects their wish to continue. And you're translating that wish into a word by saying, we will continue.
Exactly, but at the same time, touching the back of the patient or hugging, not only words plus a gesture that involves the skin.
You're bringing the integration together. You're doing the physical and the verbal. Right, right. That's lovely.
Exactly.
Let me ask you about that. You talk about how the lesions often in your mind reflect for the patient noxious internalized objects and internalized images of their family members. Their scratching and cutting and peeling and scaling reflect their mixed feelings, unexpressed, unrecognized, towards those family members. I imagine that you've had experiences, as I have, where in the process of helping them become aware of everything we just said, the analyst has to experience that sense of badness that the patient will often treat them with. That the analyst takes on the sense of badness, evilness, darkness, hurtfulness, that the patient is so committed to an unverbalizable darkness that to really reach them, you have to take on that experience, which is difficult. And I wondered if you've had that experience.
Yes, I do. For example, I will comment a situation in a group of patients that I assisted many years ago, in which all the patients were improving a lot. It was a psoriasis patients group. And suddenly one patient said, I have my closet full of creams, remedies, and treatment things to my psoriasis, and I don't use them, and I want not using them anymore, but I don't know what to do with all of this stuff that is in my closet. Should I throw them to the rubbish bin? And another patient immediately associated that once he was in a barbecue in a place in which they were cooking meat, and there was a ceiling fan. He said that he was watching the ceiling fan that was going around an axis, but it was not stable. The thing was about falling. And he thought, if it falls, it will cut our heads. And suddenly, the machine fell and go flying directly to the barbecue and landed over the meal, the meat. And I understood that this patient was talking about the sensation of being crazy, becoming crazy, or losing his head if they don't have the skin disease as a stabilizer of their psyche. This is a very complex idea, but sometimes the disease plays the role of something which is bad or crazy or disorganized that becomes organized or stable thanks to the disease. When you, with the treatment, help the patient to get rid of the disease, sometimes he feels the threatening of becoming disorganized or crazy.
Is that similar to the idea of years ago where many conditions were called in the States depressive equivalents, and that when you were successful in helping the patient become aware of the feelings that the somatic symptoms were representing, they then had a chance to experience the depression, which can either be workable or overwhelming and then perhaps needing medication. Is that similar?
Sí, very similar, very similar.
That when patients start feeling anxious and depressed, that's a sign of progress.
Yes, sometimes yes. The problem is that the relatives or the family says, oh, he's becoming worse.
Yes, I know, I know. The other phenomena that I've noted and has been written about is how there often can be an interchangeability of somatic symptoms, where some patients will come in with irritable bowel, and as the work continues, the therapeutic work, they may develop migraines, or they then may develop skin diseases or backaches. And that is a sign of the progress of the treatment. And some people, again, misunderstand it as, oh, the person's getting worse. But it's there was a colleague in New York years ago named Philip Wilson, who worked also very extensively in psychosomatics. And he recorded many cases where they would change from one symptom picture to another along the route to eventually being symptom-free.
I have the same experience, and it's when the disease is very chronic and fixed, I consider that when it changes or it advances or displaces from one disease to the other, this is a signal of progress. And the analyst shouldn't be afraid of that and should continue containing the patient and working deeply to help the patient to get rid of not only the chronic fixed disorder, but the new ones that appear replacing the chronic and fixed disorder. For example, in the skin, what I saw is that sometimes a patient has the skin lesions in one localized part of his body, for example, the elbows or or any part. And the disease doesn't migrate. It's stuck in this part of the body. And suddenly, during the treatment, a chronic lesion disappears from the belly and appears on the legs. For example, a new lesions appear on the legs. And the patient first feels anxious because, oh, I have new lesions. And you have to point out that the old lesions are migrating. And I consider that it's licit to say the patient, for example, if the lesions appear on the legs, well, they appear on the legs because they are going out, they walk. If the disease is walking outside you, it's good that the lesions appear on your legs.
You're also challenging their pessimism with optimism.
Yes, but the idea is not exactly to... I'm not lying. I'm not...
No, I understand that. I do get that. I didn't suggest it was being false, but I imagine that patients like that do tend to find the most burdensome version of their symptoms to focus on.
Exactly. What I try is to make the disease thinkable and to give sense in a place in which the nonsense is commanding or mastering the whole situation. So when you find some sense, all the psychological starts working. It doesn't mean that the sense is really there. I'm not translating literally. I'm not saying that, well, the disease have a fixed sense and the sense is exactly in your unconscious.
You're introducing metaphor to it as well.
Exactly, exactly. I think that humor, metaphors, playing are splendid tools to work as a psychoanalyst.
Organically, we have returned to my original question, how can a psychoanalyst add meaning and healing to their dermatologic patients? And what you just said about metaphor and humor and observability of symptoms that are otherwise initially seen as just physical and syntonic is really the gift that psychoanalysts can give to such patients. You know, I'm looking at the title of your last book, Skin and Psychoanalysis, and I'm listening to your experience working with these patients, and my temptation is to want to spend more and more time learning about your experiences. We, I'm afraid, do have to interrupt for now. I do invite our listeners to read your book called Skin in Psychoanalysis, where you will hear more about Dr. Olenek's vast experience working with these patients. But I do want to thank you for shedding so much of your experience clinically working with these patients and help us understand the real challenging tensions between the mind and body and how we immerse ourselves in it, work with colleagues in it, experience it inside ourselves, and often enough heal patients through it. So I'm grateful for your agreeing to come on to the podcast and sharing your experience, and perhaps we'll do this again.
Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure for me to participate, and I'm very happy to contribute.
Thank you for listening. If I may, I'd like to ask you to help us publicize our podcast by rating us on iTunes or simply sharing it with a friend. You can also visit our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can both subscribe and also add your comments. I'd also like to acknowledge the lovely rendition of Beethoven's Opus 18th String Quartet by the Allegri String Quartet on the Vivat label.